It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282. And let's talk legal.
All right. Cesar Harbell and Wes Collins are with us here this morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben.
What are we talking about today?
Ben, last week we started talking about the elective share. The elective share is a very important element of our general statutes as mm-hmm. it relates to the rights of a surviving spouse.
Okay.
You know, at Harvell and Collins, we do so much estate-related work. It's something that we deal with, this elective share statute, you know, pretty much on a weekly basis. But generally speaking, in a very broad sense, what the elective share is it is a statute that deals with the right for the surviving spouse mm-hmm. to not be disinherited.
Right.
Okay? Okay. So it's a protection so that the surviving spouse has the right to make an election after the death of the spouse, the right. husband, the wife.
Okay.
There's a lot of detail with regard to that. We spoke a little bit about that last week. The calculations as far as how to determine the elective share amount can be sometimes complicated, but we're going to, I think, wrap up that topic today, the elective share topic.
Okay.
Since we got going last week, we'll tie up the loose ends this week.
All right. What do we have remaining here?
Well, Ben, you know, to put this in a very practical, you know, context, folks come in and let's say that they are married, and due to any number of circumstances, maybe the wife has inherited a significant inheritance from her parents, or maybe they're in a second marriage and they want their assets to pass to their children mm-hmm. from their first marriages. They make the comment to Wes or myself. They say, well, you know, we've decided, we have agreed that, you know, our home is jointly titled, but that all of our other assets are going to go to our children. Mm-hmm. Okay. My wife doesn't really need my assets. My husband doesn't really plan on any of my assets, Mr. Harvell. Mm-hmm. And we would like for these things to just pass on to our children. Well, of course, you know, excuse me, that's very easily said, but
right.
it's difficult to apply that, okay, mm-hmm. because, of course, this elective share statute gives the surviving spouse a right in the estate. Now, Wes, do you have those percentages in front of us?
I don't have them in front of me, but basically we go from
right. –
we go up to a 50% total net assets. So we're talking about 50% of all of the total net assets in the event that we're in a marriage for 15 years or more. So once we get
right.
to that 15, it doesn't get any higher. So generally, what are we talking about when we're dealing with total net assets? That's important. We really talk about everything.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about, you know, we're talking about non-probate assets such as annuities, you know, IRAs,
right.
Life insurance with some analysis that takes place with regard to that,
mm-hmm.
interest in real property.
Personal
property. Really everything across the board that passes as a result of the death. It's not just the assets that pass under the terms of the will.
Mm-hmm. So from the life insurance to the gun collection.
It goes from A to Z.
Mm-hmm.
So we calculate those total net assets, and then there are some deductions based on certain circumstances. There could be some deductions as far as like the expense of the administration of the estate. There could be deductions as it relates to other items that the spouse may have received. For example, if there is an account, you know, this a joint account, and the person does receive that joint account upon the death, then we're not counting all of the total net assets because or the entire account
mm-hmm.
as total net assets because the spouse already owned half of it. So there's a lot of calculation, fact-finding in order to determine the amount of the total net assets. But who makes the final determination on that is the clerk of court.
Right.
That's, again, one of these very important roles that the clerk of court has when we're talking about really many aspects of estate administration. Because, you know, when you're dealing with the state administration in North Carolina, I mean, the judge of probate really is the clerk of court. You don't end up before a superior court judge. We don't have, you know, probate judges, so to speak, like a lot of states do. We have the clerk of court. So in many cases, when you're dealing with an elective share claim, you know, there's a matter of fact-finding, getting the information, making the calculations. In a lot of cases, you're able to get to a point where the parties actually agree because it's statutory. You just have to provide the information and do the calculation. Now, you can imagine sometimes there's arguments over, is this included? Yes, is right. that included?
Yeah.
If there's a closely held business, we got to get, business valuations. You know, if there's, real property, we have to have real property appraisals because we don't know what the value is, these type of things.
I'm going to imagine, and then you have claims if maybe a real property is in one person's name, but the other person contributed to it. So
potentially you can have those type of offsets. No doubt about that.
Now, Ben, one of the solutions to this dynamic, these factual circumstances that are presented to us, is for us to tell the client, inform the client, of course, about the fact that notwithstanding what they agree to, at their home place, on the back porch with the grill going,
right.
The bottom line is that your spouse has a right, a more significant right in your estate, Mr. Jones. And as a result of that, then we would possibly advise one of the options for this client is to allow this elective share amount, once it is determined, to float, if you will, into a trust known as the elective share trust. The surviving spouse has a lifetime right to the, if you will, the income off of that trust. But eventually, upon that spouse's death, it would pass back to the children from the prior marriage. So the elective share doesn't pass completely over to, if you will, the surviving spouse. It passes into a trust, which has, strings attached to it and conditions and things of that nature, so as to accomplish the objective of the clients, that the bottom line is that they want their respective assets to pass back to their respective children.
But that still meets the requirement of being an elective
share. It does, as long as the trust is properly drafted, as long as it has an independent trustee, as long as it has the appropriate language in it, then that will qualify as the elective share. But this trust then puts, as I just said, some strings attached to the elective share amount. Keep in mind that if the elective share amount just passes to the surviving spouse, Ben, not within the context of a trust, and they just receive it, then it would pass according to their will, likely to their children.
Right.
Or to whoever their beneficiary might be, and not back to the children of the deceased spouse.
Okay.
So let's talk about a real world situation.
Sure.
Listeners oftentimes tell me, I like it when you talk about, things that really happen, and we can do that as long as we don't get into names and those type issues, and as long as the case is resolved. So one particular, we've handled lots of elective share claims over the years, but one in particular elective share claim that comes to mind that was of interest and is kind of points out how this works was a situation many years ago where the daughters of a surviving husband basically came to me, and their questions were along the lines of, dad is in an assisted living facility. He's not doing very well. His wife just died. She kind of brought more to the marriage and owned the home and had other things, and he didn't bring as much to the marriage. Mr. Collins, we're very concerned about how we're going to be able to make ends meet. Okay. We don't know how we're going to be able to, continue to get him the care he needs, these type things. Her children from a previous marriage, and there you go. I mean, that's where you kind of get, more of an adversarial situation. I think the daughter or son, I can't remember, was the executor, and they're not telling us anything. We don't know if she left him anything. She just passed away. And my number one question was, okay, when did she die?
Mm-hmm.
Because 6 months is the period of time with regard to the elective share. So in the event that it was more than 6 months ago, as it relates to when the estate opened, then we may not have the right to bring an elective share. But see, you know, these daughters come in, they have no idea that there are protections in our statutes to make sure that their father cannot be disinherited.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's incumbent upon me that, you know, knowledge is power, right?
Mm-hmm.
To understand, you know, that law and how to use it and to advise the client with regard to that. So, I immediately advise them with regard to the elective share and go to the assisted living facility and meet with the father, the husband, because he's my client, obviously.
Right.
He then appoints his daughters as power of attorney. He decides to proceed with the elective share claim. And then he dies.
Mm-hmm.
He dies like a month later.
Oh, wow. While it's still in process.
So that brings up another issue. In the event we did not act quickly in order to file the elective share, then there would be no right to an elective share because the elective share claim has to be filed during the life of the surviving spouse. Cannot be done through power of attorney. Okay. So
post after the fact.
Can't be done through power of attorney, you know, after he dies. Can't be done after it dies. It's just void in the event that you file for an elective share claim, you know, after the death of the spouse.
All right. More to come in a moment here. If you have questions on this, you give us a call at 247-7282. That's 247-7282. And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. You can go online at harvellandcollins.com and listen to past shows. You can find them there by subject. And we're talking today about the special rights of husbands and wives once their spouse dies.
Right. Just finishing up with this scenario where, you know, we file the elective share claim. The daughters of the surviving spouse come in and meet with me. They have no idea what an elective share claim is. They're more concerned about, you know,
where's the money coming from?
Making sure that their father, you know, has the assets to be able to take care of his health care. We make the appropriate elective share claim. He then dies about a month later. That's my recollection. Might have been a couple months later, but nevertheless, he passes away. And then,
but the claim can still be processed.
It can be processed. And by law, it is to be processed. So we proceed on with the elective share. There then is a discovery process involved. There was some transfer of asset that took place before the death of the spouse, the wife, and that was within a year, and that was transfer of assets to the kids. There was some argument about whether, you know, she really wanted that to happen or not.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, maybe the kids were planning for the possibility of elective share. I don't know.
Right.
But they were trying to move things out of her name. Be it as it may, the statute then allows for a clawback of those things. And that, here we are again, yet another thing that came up. I mean, I just brought up one. He died before the claim was finished, but the claim goes forward as long as the claim is made before he passes away.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
and
one
within
of the,
6 months of when
and
she
within
passed
six
away.
Months, that's right, those two things. And then the clawback provision then allows us to see, you know, obviously assets that were transferred, let's say, for example, to kids within a year prior to the death. Next, we got into somewhat of an adversarial situation involving the information they were giving to us. I mean, you can kind of recognize this. Obviously, you've got the children from a previous marriage.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the surviving spouse who's deceased. And then you've got, you know, they're wanting to hold on to their inheritance as much as possible. And then the daughters of the surviving spouse, the father, the husband, they would like to receive what they could receive.
Right.
All right.
Right.
For better or worse. So with that being said, you know, we go forward with that. But
it's no longer an issue, though, of his health care now, though.
It's not an issue.
So it is really inheritance.
It is really straight inheritance. So we're able to claw back the assets. We're able to use the provisions in the statute that indicate that if their folks aren't forthcoming with regard to discovery, providing information, so on and so forth, so that we can make the correct elect-to-share claim, then we have the right to get attorney's fees. Then, and that's a statutory right. I mean, it's right there in the statute. So that really is quite a motivator for folks to be transparent with regard to gifting, with regard to what assets there are, those type things, because in the event it's determined that you're not, then you could be paying for both sides as far as a lawyer goes. So long story short, with the rest of it, we basically were able to finally get all the information, make the elective share claim. And, you know, with this situation where these daughters came in and they were concerned about just one thing, let's make sure that we're able to, you know, help my father's health care get taken care of. Well, he basically spent everything he had right up until he died taking care of it.
Not unusual.
Doing the health care. And then at the end of the day, I'm not going to say how much they received, but it was way up six figures. So maybe not seven figures, but it was a lot. So the, you know, knowledge is power with regard to the right for the elective share, and to know how to use that statute, how to navigate the ins and outs of that. You know, it's a very powerful statute that not only protects the surviving spouse, that probably is the intent, but the practical reality is that in certain circumstances, it protects their heirs too. And that's exactly what happened in this case.
How long had they been married?
Over 15.
Oh.
Over 15.
In that second marriage.
Over 15, well, yep.
Another permutation of the of this statute in the way in which it can apply in real life, Ben, is we've had a lot of files like this. Let's just be practical here. Folks usually marry someone, let's maybe say, usually similar in age. So when they age and they become 80 and then the husband dies, the wife may be infirm, and her children may actually be operating according to her power of attorney. Well, the agent under a power of attorney potentially would be advised to file for this elective share because of the fact that they have a fiduciary obligation to do so. So keep in mind, we started today's program and last week was saying that the folks, you know, on the front porch say to each other, oh, I'll never file for an elective share. We have agreed that our assets go to our respective children. We're going to write out wills that leave everything, the house maybe, to each other, but everything else goes back to our children. You know, we all agree to that. Well, we all agree to that when we are, you know, in our 50s, 60s, 70s, of sound mind, doing well, things are going okay.
Eating watermelon on the front porch.
Correct.
We all agree to that.
Exactly. We all agree to that. But what has happened in our law firm numerous times is that it's not the person eating the watermelon on the porch making the decision. It's their representative pursuant to their power of attorney or potentially their letters of guardianship, where they then have a fiduciary obligation to come forward and file for the elective share. We have that in our office. The file ended about a year and a half ago, and that was over $1 million case. That was $1 million election made by a power of attorney on behalf of a surviving wife.
If I'm thinking about the right one, we were on the receiving end of that one.
We were.
Yeah, so we didn't file it. We had to deal with it, and we had to calculate it appropriately and provide the information.
Correct.
Right. But, you know, Cecil's point is that the person who filed it, I think, was another attorney who had been appointed by the court to be guardian.
Guardian.
That's right.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a choice.
He doesn't have a choice.
If he doesn't file that, then he could be on the other side of a lawsuit, a breach of fiduciary duty.
Everyone who knew this beautiful lady, very old and infirm at this point, but everyone who knew her understood that that was not her intention.
Talking about the elective share I'm sure, as you said, Wes, too, it was brand new to those folks who were looking to apply it, because they hadn't heard of that before. Imagine a lot of our audience has never heard of it.
Well, not only that, you know, this is, if you don't really practice in a state very much, mm-hmm. then even attorneys don't deal with the elective share that often if you don't deal in these areas. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were to ask me about, for example, criminal defense, I don't even want to talk about it. I'm going to send it down the road to someone who knows what they're doing. Likewise, you know, you deal with lots of attorneys who just have never dealt with it before. They may have heard of it. They don't mm-hmm. know how it works. They're not sure, you know, how to file the petition, how to plan around it. I mean, there's a lot of nuances mm-hmm. and moving parts with regard to it.
Because there are ways, Ben, you know, to plan around mm-hmm. this contingency. And to make the front porch watermelon party a reality, mm-hmm. okay? And as I stated before, what do these folks do to make it a reality? They have good documentation that says that when there is this elective share, it goes into a trust. It's suspended. Mm-hmm. In the 80-year-plus file that I just spoke about, that lady, you know, did not last that much longer. She mm-hmm. lasted a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But the attorney representing her felt that he needed to file the elective share. It was a very significant amount of money, as I said before, mm-hmm. well in excess of, you know, $1 million. And that all those assets passed to her and then passed to her children
mm-hmm.
to the exclusion of, you know, what the agreement was on the porch years before.
Right.
That could have been avoided had those folks had documentation to say that figure, that $1 million figure, had gone into a trust for her benefit for that year and a half and then back to his children.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be planned. There can be a good plan of action, but we have to have the opportunity to do it.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. as you said before, Cecil, that the trust itself then also allows for, once that person has mm-hmm. died, then there's some other assets that are distributed.
Right.
So, right.
Right.
Okay. And it allows for protection of that surviving spouse. I mean, mm-hmm. that's the idea here. But it allows you, through your estate plan, to take control of how you want to go about doing that, as opposed to the rules and laws of the state of North Carolina imposing that upon your estate. Mm-hmm. So planning ahead of time is, what do they say? They say failure to plan is planning to fail.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So, you know.
So it's not just a matter of the will, as everybody has said here. This is a matter of also understanding where you truly want everything to end up.
Just a standard will is not going to touch the elective share issue at all.
Mm-hmm.
So you could very much have, you know, a eventual consequence of your death as it relates to your assets be entirely inconsistent with what your will states.
Okay. All right. And again, if you want to get involved in that planning as well, you want to call on the folks at Harbell & Collins, go to the website at harbellandcollins.com and go by and visit them on Bridges Street in Moorhead City.